Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. BOOM.
Today's podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek's the best way for you to buy and sell tickets right on your phone, whether you have an iPhone, Android, or any other smartphone. You're going to find tickets to anything out there that you want to go to, whether that's a Cavs game, an Indians game, a play, a concert. It's on SeatGeek. You're going to get graded tickets so you know exactly what kind of deal you're going to get. You're going to see the view from your seat right in the app so you kind of know exactly what you're going to see and if your view is going to be good or if it's going to be blocked at all. And you're getting tickets from every big seller out there, so you're not going to have any issue on if you know you're getting the best deal. I've used SeatGeek before. I've used it to go get Migos tickets, to get Run the Jewels tickets, to get Cavs tickets. I'm going to use it to get Hamilton tickets in a year's time. And I have told my friends, when you need to get tickets, go use SeatGeek. One of my best friends just got Chance the Rapper tickets on SeatGeek, so him and I can go see Chance the Rapper at Blossom in about 2 weeks. If you're there, come say hi. And my listeners today can save $20 on your first purchase by using the promo code LOCAVS, that's L-O-C-A-V-S. You're going to save $20 on that first purchase by entering that promo code under the settings tab and downloading that app today. SeatGeek, it's the best way for you to buy tickets.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword. Joining me today is the co-host of the Chase Down podcast, part of the Almighty Ballin Network, and a contributor at Fear the Sword and Press Basketball. It's Justin Rowe. And Justin, what's going on?
Not too much. Glad that yet another series is over and there's going to be some time off.
Yeah. I think the Cavs are certainly more excited for that time off than we are, but I'm pretty excited about that time off. Cavs win game four, 109-102. The Raptors got that lead down to as many as one, then take the lead after not leading for most of that game from the second quarter on. And then the Cavs just do Cavs things. Kyrie has 11 straight. LeBron hit some big shots, and that game felt very over at the four-minute mark. I mean, Justin, did you think at any point when the Raptors came back that there was a chance that we weren't going to wrap this up, see the Cavs wrap this up in game four?
I felt like there would have had to be a lot of really weird plays, because when the Raptors made that run and they kind of took a lead, the Cavs were still just kind of messing around. Like, LeBron had that possession where he jacked up a three, got the rebound, and immediately jacked up another three. And it was a lot of possessions like that. And I felt as soon as the Cavs started executing and running their plays, the Raptors once again really didn't have any counter for it. Like, that was kind of the story of the series, was that Toronto just didn't have anything to take away what the Cavs want to run. And just with the ease that they were able to get their looks, I just didn't feel really any threat of an upset there.
Yeah, and I think the Cavs generally were better in this series than they were against the Pacers. Like, I think the defense was better. They had their defensive rating was down pretty significantly. Up front of the pod, Dylan Haynes, a writer for The Sword, just tweeted that the Cavs were at 111 against the Pacers. They were down at 100.9 against the Raptors. That's a pretty dramatic improvement. I thought the offense was a bit sharper. I still think you had moments where Kyrie, it didn't shoot well. Like, I don't think his shooting numbers are going to come out that clean. Love was sort of invisible for stretches, but Kyrie impacted the game in other ways. and LeBron is transcendent. And the Cavs, fun fact, have won 11 straight playoff games dating back to when they came back from 3-1. They have not lost since last year's finals. That's pretty crazy, and I think they've just cruised through this so far. Do you feel like you learned anything from this game or this series about the team that you did know already?
I think what I learned was that the Cavs were closer to what I thought they needed to be than I realized. Like, I thought it was going to take some time for them to work through their faults and really get to the level that they'll need to be at if they want to have a chance at repeating. The execution that the team showed really impressed me. I think that time off before the series and the practices that they had really benefited them. And I'm looking forward to seeing what gear the Cavs can find after this break, because they just have so many high IQ players and guys that are now starting to get comfortable with playing with one another. That I think just the more times they get to practice, the more time they get to study film, it almost benefits them more than the games at this point.
Yeah, let's talk about that first, because there's some stuff about the game we'll have to get into. But the Cavs at the earliest are going to play on May 15th. That is next Monday. At the latest, if Celtics Wizards goes the full seven games, it'll start on May 17th.
Right.
And that's 10 days of rest at the most. That is 8 days at minimum. That's huge for the Cavs. Like, that is ideal. That is a week. That is two. You could rest for like 3 days and just have them do some mild workouts or something and then still get practice time in, still get a lot of film session in. Very similar to what we got out of round one for the Cavs and saw them have in round one. Like, that just benefits this team, I think, more than people are going to realize. Like, LeBron had this quote at the beginning of this series where he said, we practice more this week and the week off between the Pacers and the Raptors series than they did in all of March when everything was just a dumpster fire, when everything was awful for this team. Like, that to me is a big reason why you saw the jump in quality from run one to run two. I think that practice time, like you said, is just so vital for a team like this. And you're still seeing them tinker in games, right? Like, I think the second quarter was in Lou experimenting with that shooty lineup that Korver was fuego in, and they just kind of rolled from there.
Yeah, I think that's something people don't realize is how little NBA teams get to practice during the regular season. Like, between the travel schedules and just the grind of the regular season, there's not a lot of opportunities, and the Cavs had such a road-heavy schedule in March and April that it made things even more difficult. So, as I said, I just think the more time that they have off, the better. I'm not concerned about rust. I really don't fear either the Celtics or Wizards in this upcoming series. I really did feel like Toronto was going to give the Cavs their best fight in the Eastern Conference, but Toronto didn't really show up to the same level that I anticipated. Obviously, Kyle Lowry getting hurt in Game 2 certainly impacted that, but they just seemed like a defeated team, and it was almost like they were still shook from their series against the Bucks.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the Lowry thing, to me, it sucks for him, and it sort of, I think, complicates their decision about him maybe more so, because it's like, oh, it didn't matter, and would these games have actually been different if he would have played? Yeah, I don't really think the Cavs are going to go into that Eastern Conference Finals, whoever they play. I don't think they're actually going to, like, feel threatened by either of those teams.
No, I don't think so either.
Like, I don't know. I think Washington is probably the harder matchup for the Cavs. I think, like, Wall...
No, why is that? Because Washington has struggled so much on defensive...
That's true.
On the defensive end, and I just don't feel like they have that gear that the Cavs had to turn around their D.
Does Boston, though? I don't know. I just don't think Boston actually is going to, like, stop LeBron, you know?
Well, like, none of these teams have a player that can defend LeBron.
Here's my case for Washington that I think, like, in theory, they can push the Cavs. I think Wall, if he's playing really well, if the Cavs are going to continue trapping the opponent's best player, that's going to be really, really hard to do against Wall because he's just so fast. He's physical, and Beal, and they have Beal there as a legit secondary creator that can shoot a little bit off the ball too. Like, I think the thing with DeRozan and Lowry was Lowry wasn't healthy. And DeRozan isn't like super fast and gonna get around the traps. Like he did it really well in game three. The rest of the series, not so much. I think Wall's gonna be able to attack that strategy more so than the Cavs have seen so far. I think Beal is gonna cause some problems in the back, but it might not matter that much. That's sort of where I think the Wizards would push them more. I think the big bodies for them matter too. Like they're very thin, but they have Mahinmi, they have Gortat. I think that could put some pressure on Cleveland, but it might not matter, right? Like, are you gonna get away with Otto Porter defending LeBron James? Probably not. Like these things are just, they're not gonna matter all that much ultimately. But I look at Boston, like they're gonna trap Isaiah a lot. Like, and Isaiah's really good. He's had an incredible year. Like, they're gonna trap him, and they're gonna make guys like Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, Al Horford beat them. And like, those guys are good players, but like, are they gonna actually just punish the Cavs for giving them open threes? Probably not.
Yeah, I would guess not.
Right, and like, who in Boston? Like, okay, Kyrie maybe can, you know, get sucked into battles with Avery Bradley, right? But have we seen him play so far in the playoffs? I don't know how much I think he's going to do that over and over again, right? Like, that's not something he's done so far. He hasn't done that, the thing where he just throws himself in a phone booth and tries to destroy a guy one-on-one quite as much, if at all, in a significant way so far. Like, that to me is sort of important too, because Kyrie, I think only game three was the only game he didn't have at least 9 assists in this series.
Right. Yeah, it's I think he's played with a lot of control in the series. I felt game four against Indiana, he was pressing early on. He's obviously still struggling with his jumper, but when you look at his stat line, you got the 27 points, 9 assists, 5 boards, 4 steals, and a block. Like, he's finding ways to get it done and finding ways to still make an impact. And, I mean, for the series, he had the highest plus-minus out of anyone. Now, that's obviously a flawed stat, but in the past, I don't think you could get away with Kyrie playing as much as he has if his jumper's not there. Right. But he's finding ways. He's evolved as a player. I think that's clear for everyone to see. And hopefully this game and how he closed out game four, plus that time off, helps him kind of get his confidence back and get back to the level that we've seen him play offensively for the bulk of his career.
Yeah, I mean, if he's hitting shots the way he normally does, I think Wendy tweeted out that him and LeBron combined for like 92 assists or scored points in game four. That's absurd. That is absurd.
Yeah. 92 of the 102. That's just crazy.
There's not a team in the East that's gonna stop that. Like, there's just not. I don't think. I don't know.
That's one of my takeaways too. Is just the Cavs really do have so many weapons, and now that they're getting comfortable playing with one another, I don't think you're ever going to be able to stop the Warriors. But I feel pretty confident that this team's going to be able to keep up with them offensively.
Yeah, I think, like, it's interesting too. Like, the fourth quarter was LeBron prodding Kyrie. Like,
yeah,
like he was pushing Kyrie to do this, like kind of getting something out of Kyrie that he hadn't done yet. Like, he had that 15-point third quarter. He had bits and pieces of games where he was really, really good. he was great in game four. That was the Kyrie I think we've sort of been waiting to see for stretches. Like, that to me, out of everything we saw in game four, like, I think that matters most, and I think that second quarter lineup to me is incredible. Like, that second quarter lineup, with how much ball movement there was, how much shooting there is, how much creation there is, like, yeah, those to me are the only two things that I think actually, like, matter coming out of this game. Like, I'm not sure how much, like, Tristan Thompson having a really bad plus-minus matters. I don't think it probably does. Like,
I think anyone that watched saw that he had a pretty good series.
Like, yeah, he was essential to their bench lineups. Tyronn Lue literally has rejiggered lineups to get him playing with bench lineups now. He went to Fry and Love at the end of the first quarter to get Thompson in with the bench unit. You had Fry had another like 3-point shooting game. Okay, like, you know, how much does that matter? Does Valanciunas, like, does Corey Joseph scoring 20 points matter that much? Like, no. Does not, did this matter all that much? Like, not really. I think the other thing that
I saw a few people, sorry to cut you off, but people point out Corey Joseph's point production and all that as an indictment on Irving. And I actually thought Kyrie played a good defensive game, but the Cavs were strategically funneling shots towards Corey Joseph because he's never been a high volume shooter. And Joseph played out of his mind. I think he got a little exhausted by the end. But that was a strategic decision from the Cavs. That wasn't necessarily Corey Joseph going off on Kyrie one-on-one.
Yeah, let's talk about that Kyrie thing for a second. Let's just end this right now.
All right.
There have been people, and we're not going to name people or accounts or whatever. Yeah, you can go look at Chops' mentions and, like, find them. Like, they've basically just been, like, like pummeling his mentions. People have suggested that the Cavs need to bring Kyrie Irving off the bench, or at least need to consider. This isn't new. This is something from last year when Delly was everyone's, not everyone's, but a lot of people's saviors. This is dumb. Like, this is just one of the dumbest things I think people could suggest. Like, yes, Deron Williams is killing it against bench units because he's playing against bench units. Kyrie is not looking, like, as good, and his plus-minus, like, isn't as good because he's playing against better players than Deron Williams. This is not hard. Like, this shouldn't be hard. And, like, Delly looked really good last year because his job was to shoot, play against bench units, and just defend people. Like, that is his whole job. Like, this isn't
right.
This shouldn't be that hard. I don't understand the, like, let's just drag Kyrie. Like, let's critique it. Like, I'm all for critiquing him. I think his defense, like, has needed critiquing all year. Like, I think his passing up until this
series hasn't been great.
Right. His passing and willingness as a passer, like, took a step up in this series. But, like, why is there just this, like, need to drag him and suggest he should come off the bench? That, to me, is that's just a very bizarre reaction to how he's played.
And it's funny to me, too, because some of the rationale, and it's not one person that was saying this, but the rationale was that Deron Williams would be the steadying force. And it's funny because it's counterintuitive to basically everything, because one, the bench lineup has worked so well with LeBron. I don't know if you want to mess with that. Two, if Kyrie's struggling offensively, he's still going to carry a lot of gravity. And if he's not getting a shot to fall, you'd want him with the starters where that would be minimized, where it's not as big of an issue, as long as he continues to make these good decisions, as we saw him do all series. So it just didn't make any sense to me, especially because Deron Williams and LeBron throughout this series, those lineups didn't work as well as they had in the past. Like, those were significantly worse. So to suggest that would be kind of a steadying factor, it was just absolutely wild to me to see that.
Yeah, we just gotta stop. Like, just stop. Like, please, just stop suggesting this. Anything else from this series stand out to you at all?
Geez. No, not necessarily. Obviously, it was great to see Kyle Korver go off for the last two games. He just is so pure. Like, his makes look prettier than anyone else's makes. And to see him play good team defense, to get these looks, to function well in place of J.R. Smith, it's just another look that the Cavs have. I guess my other commentary would be the Cavs got a great series from their bench with Richard Jefferson playing, which I think RJ can still make a big difference potentially in the finals. And I think him getting this time off is going to be really valuable for him as well.
Yeah, I think the Jefferson thing is interesting just because I agree with you. I think if you're looking at how the Cavs are going to need to play against, assuming they're playing Golden State, I kind of think, like, if you're looking at him and Shumpert, because I think Korver is just going to play at this point. Like, I think they're just going to have to find a way to hide him as best as possible, and I think you probably can do that against guys like Ian Clark and whatnot. Jefferson's ability to switch onto Durant is going to be really important, and I think Shumpert, like, can do it, and I think he's played very much within himself during the series and during the playoffs so far in a way that we hadn't seen for most of the regular season when he played. But I think you need Jefferson to just be able to switch on to Durant. Like, think about the end of the Christmas Day game. Like, did he maybe trip him? Sure. Like, could you maybe call could you maybe call the foul there? Like, sure. But he's able to switch and throw a LeBron-like sized body in front of Durant on those situations. And the Cavs aren't switching as much right now, but I get the feeling that if they're going to do anything to change up their strategy in the finals. I feel like they're going to be less willing to give Durant that little space or give Curry that little space and maybe switch more than they're going to trap against Golden State.
Right. Oh, I completely agree. And I think you have to still go with the strategy of having LeBron on Draymond Green, just because limiting Draymond will limit the amount of quality shots Steph and Clay get. So having a lot of bodies, Richard Jefferson being one of them, to throw at Durant is going to be invaluable to the Cavs. Like, it's maybe the history of chirping him up a little bit there too is something that can be used to their advantage, because the Cavs seem to like having that psychological edge over the Warriors. I think that was a big part in their second game there, when Draymond came to deliver the elbow to LeBron at half court. I think all the fallout and everything there, it was just to kind of lay that seed and get them frustrated for future matchups.
Let's last thing we'll talk about, Kevin Love in this game, 34 minutes, 2 of 7 field goals, 1 of 4 from the 3-point line. Plus 13, played, I think, not as well as he did in Game 3 when he had a good rebounding game, as I had a pretty solid double-double. Are you at all, I mean, how do you feel like he's played so far? And how do you think he kind of performed against Toronto?
I think overall he's been pretty good. I'd like to see him get more involved. But I think it's also telling that in the fourth quarter of a close game where he struggled and wasn't really himself, he was still diving for a loose ball and came up with the loose ball in a crucial possession. Like, I think he still is fighting and competing. Game 4 was a little strange because Ibaka was really bodying him off ball basically all game and being allowed to get away with that. And I don't know necessarily why that was the case. It was a pretty physical game on both ends. But I think that had some impact on him, and I don't know if that's necessarily always going to be the case.
Yeah, the Kevin Love highlight for this game for me was when he fouled Ibaka late in the game and the Raptors went up 93-92. Love had, like, this look on his face of just, like, shock, but kind of just, like, whatever, shock and disappointment. Like, he was like someone told him they didn't have, like the beer he wanted at a bar or something. Like, he just looked a little bit bummed out, but just like, eh, whatever.
I'll live with it. You almost needed the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme playing over
right,
that.
Right, just Love just kind of be like, whatever. Like, I'm going to get a week off and can go home, yeah. J.R. Smith Jr., you wrote about this, had a overall, like, he didn't shoot, like, 1 of 6 from 3 in this game, but good defense again on DeRozan, which is just, like, a weird
classic
thing
classic Sunday J.R. game.
Yeah, not even, well, did you, I don't know, like, I don't remember who tweeted this, but some reporter from Toronto said something about the Cavs having, like, a hotel party yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And I was just like, Ryan Wohlstadt, yeah, and I was the just Toronto
like,
Sun.
And I was just like, oh, okay, the Cavs, Cavs enjoyed themselves in Toronto. I'm not shocked. I am not shocked at all. I didn't ask you this, and I kind of want to get your take. The Celtics, as we're recording this, are beating the Wizards in Game 4 with Isaiah playing really, really well. Who would you like to see the Cavs face in the Eastern Conference Finals?
I'd get more joy out of sweeping the Celtics. I worry about the Celtics taking cheap shots and hurting the Cavs.
Kelly Olynyk's not dirty, though, Justin.
No, he's not. And Marcus Smart isn't reckless at all. And they're just great. And Al Horford definitely didn't step under Markieff Morris on purpose.
Yeah, I kind of think the Boston thing would... Like, I feel like if we're all year we've sort of talked about... Like, is there a challenger for the Cavs in the East? And I think Washington has been there, but I think, like, if we're looking at who people have considered, like, as the Cavs' biggest threat, it was probably Toronto. I think the trades did that, and then that obviously changed. Boston has, I think, been the leader of that race all year, right? Like, it has been people saying, if a team's going to beat the Cavs, it's going to be Boston. There was that game near the end of the regular season where the Cavs just smacked them in Boston, and it wasn't close.
We're sick of the media treating this team as legit game.
You're right. Not a better idea. Like the first play of the game, like Isaiah just throws like a crazy pass, and yeah. I think 4 games of that for the Cavs would be sort of like interesting. And I kind of think there's a chance the Warriors and the Cavs both go 4-4-4.
Yeah.
Like I'm not saying it's likely, but
I I think the Cavs have a better chance of sweeping the conference finals. Like, I feel like there might be one game where Houston gets really hot against the Warriors, or the Spurs are able to shut them down.
Like Kawhi has a Kawhi game.
Yeah, yeah. Although I really don't buy into what the Spurs are selling.
Yeah, that series is really weird to me. Like, I can't, I think Houston, San Antonio's done a really nice job of, like, slowing down Houston's offense. Matt Moore wrote something about this at CBS that I thought was really interesting, but, like, is Houston with their, or is San Antonio with their guard play, like, actually going to hang with Golden State? Like, is, like, how are you going to get away with Patty Mills and Murray defending Steph? Like, are you? Like, can you?
Like, I mean, probably not well.
Like, that's why this, like, Durant thing, like, sort of just matters so much, because, like, Kawhi has to defend Durant.
Yeah.
Like, I guess you could put Danny Green onto Curry, but then you're putting one of the two point guards onto Clay, who's a very big two guard, who can post up a little bit, and it's just it's going to shoot over those guys. Like, that's just so many problems. Like, there's just so many problems. But I don't know. But I mean, but Houston's chance in that series is really just to outshoot Golden State.
Yeah, yeah. It basically comes down to that, and in a lot of ways, that's kind of the Cavs' strategy as well, right?
So I was DMing about this with Andy Liu, big fan of the Midwest, Andy Liu, and one of the things he tweeted about that I think is interesting is that the Golden State will struggle to score at certain points in the game where the Cavs will go to their bench lineups.
Yeah.
I wonder if the Cavs' margin of victory is, let's keep it close. Like, I'd be sort of surprised if they had, like, more than, like, one fluky blowout game, right, if they play.
I wonder there's probably going to be one of those.
Right. I wonder if Lou, with, like, that second quarter lineup, with some of the other bench things he's trying, is trying to find the lineup that he can go to in games where the Cavs can just blitz the Warriors during those stretches, get the game, like, be ahead or just slightly behind or even late in the game, and then you trust in Kyrie and LeBron to score. Like, I wonder if that's where we're headed.
There's many things. I shouldn't really say that this is the one thing that separates LeBron from other stars. But what separates LeBron from other superstars that I've seen is that other guys can go 36, 38 minutes playing at just a ridiculously high level. LeBron can get to that 46-minute mark. He can play that extra 10 minutes with seemingly less fatigue. And I think that's one of the areas that separates or gives the Cavs a better chance against the Warriors, because I think you're right. I think those are going to have to be the minutes that the Cavs win if they're going to win another championship. Like, LeBron and the bench has to outplay the Warriors when they're staggering, when they're not in their death lineup, or whenever they're not with the starters. Like, they have to win those minutes, and I think the Cavs have the weapons to really make them pay. And as long as they do a good job of controlling who makes the bulk of the decision-making, I think that's what gives them a legitimate chance to repeat.
And to bring it full circle, this is why rest is important.
This is
why LeBron James getting 8 days off, he can go hop in that cryo chamber or that whatever air chamber it is, and he can just rest. Like, he can do that. He can rest. He can get the cyborg body reworked, and he will be fine in 8 days. He will come out in game one, whether that's in Boston, whether that's in DC, whether that's at home against the Wizards, and he'll be really fresh. That 8 days, that potential 10 days. That's like giving LeBron, like, if he's playing poker, that's like telling LeBron, like, what hand he's going to get, and he can just, like, pick and choose when he's going to play. Like, it's just not fair. It's a built-in advantage.
Yeah, LeBron's good, man. Like, sometimes it just comes down to that.
That's a little hot. That's a little hot. That's a little bit of a hot take.
Like you can break it down. You can analyze it as much as you want. But really, LeBron just separates himself from everyone else in this league, and I mean, not everyone's going to agree, but I think there's a valid case that we're watching the greatest basketball player to ever play the game.
And he might be at his peak right now, too, which is like
Okay, I asked that after the game. What we're seeing from LeBron so far in the playoffs is the best I think we've seen since like 2012, 2013 Miami. Like, he looks better this year, I think, than he did in his last year in Miami or any of his previous years in the with the Cavs. And if you're a team like Toronto, I think that's part of what makes it so disheartening, because you have Kyrie that's still on the upswing. Tristan Thompson's, I mean, he improved a lot this year. He's still young. LeBron is showing no signs of slowing down. And then you have Chetty Osman, who's about to light up the world. So it really makes things difficult for them.
Yeah. There's like a subsection of Cavs Twitter that Chetty tweet was like the highlight of their Sunday. There's like 100.
Oh, man. Chetty Osman, loyal fear, the sword reader. I love it.
Yeah, the fact that that's probably the highlight of the week, is that he read David Zavok's Q&A with David Griffin and like referenced it in an interview. Like, we're international. Like, we are an international website.
Especially because of all the Osman love that we've been thrown out.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I don't know. Like, okay, let's wrap it up on this. I don't know what like a team like Toronto does now, right? Like, I don't envy having to be your like Masai right now. I don't envy trying to figure out how you decide to, what do you do with Ibaka? What do you do with Tucker? What do you do with Kyle Lowry, who didn't play in the last two games, who's like a point guard who has some injury history and is like maybe at the back end of his, like, that's just so many complicated questions. And Patrick Patterson, the free agent, like, what do you do? And if you lose 4-0 after going 6 last year and the gap just seems insurmountable, and like LeBron's not gonna, like, not like LeBron's gonna go away next year or gonna like go to the West next year, like, I don't know what you do. And that's just got to be really disheartening for that franchise.
I mean, if I had to guess, I think Dwayne Casey's gone. I think they move Valanciunas and Damari Carroll, just because even without signing Kyle Lowry, they have about $71 million in salary committed to next year, which is very high when you have Lowry, Ibaka, Tucker, and Patterson as free agents. So I think Valanciunas and Carroll get moved. I think Dwayne Casey gets moved. They may have to package Corey Joseph in one of those deals, which wouldn't surprise me because they are high on DeLon Wright. And I think they try to bring it all back, with the exception of Patrick Patterson.
Yeah, Patterson was,
I think,
weirdly,
that would just be one free agent too many.
Yeah, and he's just going to get even though he didn't play, he hasn't played well in the playoffs, like, ever, he's probably going to get paid a little bit this money this summer. Like, his skill set's pretty useful.
Yeah, yeah, I think he'd be a perfect player to, like, play on the Wolves. Like,
oh, I like that.
Next to Karl Anthony Towns, like, I think that would be a great fit. Like, teams are going to want, because he, in most instances, he is a good defender, and he's a stretch four that makes good team passes. Like, those guys get paid.
Yeah, 100%. I kind of wonder if they blow it up, though. I don't know. It's hard to, but it's
that
just
that wouldn't,
like,
surprise me either. Like, you know what? That would surprise me a little bit.
I don't know. It's just, like, I'm very skeptical of, this is, like, a conversation, like, that relates to, like, Isaiah, too. But, like, I feel very weird if I was a GM about paying a point guard who has the injury history and just was banged up, who is 31 years old right now. Like, that's a lot of money to commit to a guy. Like that's just, like, giving him the max, which he's rightfully going to ask for.
Yeah.
That just feels like a lot.
God, yeah, it's not an easy answer. It really isn't, because, on the other hand, you let him walk, you don't have the salary cap space to really replace him. And, yeah, is there a better option available?
No, I mean, that you're going to get, probably not, right? Like, it's not like you're getting CP3 to come.
Yeah, you're not getting Chris Paul.
Like, and Lowry's is the second best point guard on the market this summer, I would imagine. Like, I would guess, just off the top of my head.
Yeah, you're right, and teams are going to want to pay him. Yeah. There's going to be a market for him. I mean, even Minnesota, again, going back to them, like, Minnesota has to kind of spend some money on guys before their rookies are on their second contracts. Otherwise, they'll never be able to afford to improve their roster.
Yeah, roster building, breaking news, is really hard when you don't have LeBron James.
And David Griffin.
Yeah.
Please sign him, Cavs.
Okay,
please sign him.
Okay, yeah, but last thing, for real. That's the last thing here. What do you make of this? I talked about this with Chris Barnwell. I've talked about this with Carter Rodriguez. I've talked about this with, like our commenters, if you're the sword. This is a weird to me. This is really, really weird that if it ends, like, as far as I can tell, This is a disagreement over how much Dane Gilbert wants to spend.
It's either that, or, and I think the other leverage. Thing might be it might be control too. I think, being the GM of a LeBron team puts some pressure on you from one end, but I don't think everything we've heard of Dane Gilbert, I don't think you can assume that he isn't also giving Griffin some pressure on the other end. So I won't be surprised if David Griffin, part of this has to do with control and wanting to be team president. But maybe money is the main factor there, which if that is the case, I would be really disappointed. Well, I'm going to be disappointed to see him go if he goes. They have to bring him back. Basically, the job he's done with so little assets to work with has been fantastic. And I think losing David Griffin would hurt your championship window to some extent.
I would agree with that. Like, I think the Cavs have capable people in that front office. Guys like Kobe Altman and Trent Redden are pretty respected, but it's David Griffin. And
they're also young.
Right, right.
They're young enough to be playing right now.
Right. I think you're right about the control thing, because I don't know if you've read the Wendy McMenamin book, but there's a lot in there that's, like, for me, that relates to this, because there's moments where, like, Griffin and Gilbert would disagree on approaches. And when it came to Blatt, when it came to a lot of different things, like, even, like, the coaching process, what Gilbert wanted before 2014-15, before they knew LeBron was coming back, was just they had very different visions for that. And that's really important, and Gilbert does seem like a guy who would want that mass amount of control, wants his finger on those decisions. And if you're Griffin and the Magic are going to, as bad as that roster is and as hard as that job is going to be, maybe you want that full authority, that chance to build something completely in your own image, functionally from the ground up. You know, like, maybe that's appealing, and that you can understand that, even if you're a Cavs fan out there listening to this and thinking about this, that's going to be disappointing, because I don't think it can be understated, like, how good of a job he's done. Like, there are little things you can critique him on, but he has basically played every card possible at the right time and got them to this point.
Yeah, it's and he's a personality that's shown that he can handle this situation. Like, you look at what a mess other front offices can be and what a mess the Cavs front office has been in the past. And I think the amount of stability that he's really brought to that aspect of the organization, it's hard to overstate how big that's been for the team, and hopefully that's something that continues.
Yeah, I think the Cavs, as they go forward, if you're truly trying to maximize LeBron James's prime and have another year, another 2 years like this one, where the Cavs are just seemingly too dominant for any team in the East, I think you need David Griffin. Like, I really, really do think you need David Griffin there pulling the strings and remaining as the architect of the team.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah,
I think you have to bring him back at all costs.
Yeah, I 100% agree on that. Justin, thanks so much for coming on. Everyone out there, check out For the Sword. Check out the Chase Down Pod with him and Carter. You may get some Ryan Morton in there, which is a very startling listen last week, but a good listen nonetheless. And we'll be back tomorrow. We're still going to have a full week of shows this week on the Locked On Cavs podcast. We're going to have something kind of different on Friday that I think you'll enjoy. We're going to do a mailbag on Wednesday, so drop those questions in to lockedoncavs@gmail.com, to lockedoncavs on Twitter, or to the lockedoncavs Reddit page over at r/CavsCleveland Cavs, the post, not the page. And we'll have that up. And thanks again to SeatGeek for sponsoring today's show. Have a great rest of your Sunday night/Monday.